Hey, welcome back to RM Podcast FL. This is your favorite podcaster, Romina. I hope everybody is having a tremendous Tuesday. Today we're going to be a little extra. We're going to have a tremendous day. Well, if you're listening to the episode any other day, it's still a tremendous day. Abso-freaking-lutely. Today's guest, it's really awesome. But at the same time, I feel like I say this every time. But honestly, my motto for this podcast is to learn a new thing every single episode. And I learn one or two things minimum myself every conversation I have with these individuals. So the guest for today, I used to actually work with him. Very first interaction that I had with Edward, it was him holding the Chris Voss book, Never Split the Difference. And I'm always intrigued when people are reading books because I can actually get like an honest review, like an honest opinion of how they like the book. And he started telling me about the book and started telling me about Chris Voss. And I got really intrigued. So I went ahead and bought the book right away. And it is a really great book. Talks about negotiation. Chris Voss used to be international hostage negotiator. So it's some really great material in that book. And he talks about the Black Swan and his consulting firm, which is awesome. But before we do lose any time, I do want to just drop by and let you guys know also to not forget, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher's Radio, YouTube, Podbean, and on Google Play too. We got the confirmation from Google Play, but for some silly reason, I was thinking I'd access it, but Google is telling me that it's online, so if you guys do find it, please let me know. But let's go ahead and dive in right to the interview. I hope you guys really enjoy it, and take notes. We cover some awesome, great materials, and I will attach Edward's information on the details, too, as he did start a new career recently, where he is a part of the New York Life company. So he started his own practice, and let's get to know Edward more, and let's get to know more and pick up knowledge from him to how somebody can become an amazing trainer and how you can learn and improve yourself every day. I hope you guys enjoy it.
So just like I said on the intro, guys, today's guest is Edward Rowan. Hi, how are you today?
I am stupendous, Romina. Glad to be here.
I'm excited about this interview with you. I remember first time that I met you was at a previous location we used to both work at. And I saw a book in your hand and I was like, what book is that? Tell me about it. And it was the Chris Voss books.
Yeah.
The Don't Split the Difference. But I'm super excited. So let's get everybody to know you. Let's get everybody to get to know you a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about young Eddie till now. Walk us through your life.
The saga of young Eddie. Well, I was born in Oregon. My dad was in the Air Force and was stationed out there, but I have no remembrance of it because I grew up in Jacksonville for the first 7 years of my life.
Okay.
And my dad had the opportunity, he was a CPA, had an opportunity to open his own practice. And so at seven, we moved from the big city to Palatka.
Okay.
Which was, for those people who have been to Palatka or heard of Palatka, it is a much different place than Jacksonville. So I grew up in Palatka up until I went to high school. And believe it or not, I was a very shy kid. I was very reserved. Very unsure of myself, not very confident. And so in order for me to get people to like me, I became like the class clown, which is probably what a lot of people, you know, resonate with. But I was very shy and very introverted. But at a very young age, I got bitten by the acting bug. And so my first play was The Wizard of Oz. I was a munchkin and a flying monkey, had no lines, but I absolutely loved it. And until I got in high school, I really didn't have an outlet for it. So I really got involved in drama in high school. Graduated, went to LaGrange College in Georgia, got my bachelor's in speech, communications, and theater. Then decided I wanted some more book learning, so I went to the University of Alabama and got my master's degree in performance.
Okay.
Met my soon-to-be wife. She moved out to California to get her master's in costume design in Irvine, California. So I followed her out there pursuing my dreams, wanting to be an actor, wanting to make it big. And then eventually wound up working for the courts out in California. We were out there for 14 years, had both of our boys out there. Mm-hmm. Ended up coming back to this side of the country. Lived in Atlanta, did a couple different jobs. California, I got involved into training.
Okay.
That's when I got introduced to training and saw sort of like an opportunity to merge training with theater. Came back to Atlanta, wound up back in Jacksonville, where I started, Hakuna Matata, The World is Round. And I got a job with ADT, mm-hmm. Had been doing that for 11 and a half years as a sales trainer, as a sales manager, most recently the last 4 years as a customer retention manager. Mm-hmm. And then life just threw a curveball and I started a brand new career about a month and a half ago as a building my own practice with New York Life.
Nice, and congratulations. That's a big step.
It's a huge step.
I want to kind of go back a little bit because you said you were very shy, and I ran into this with other people that I've interviewed. Like, when I meet you now, you are one of the most confident and, like, outspoken people, but it's weird for me to see you as a shy person. How did you go from being shy to being a little bit more extrovert? Because you say you were introverted.
Yeah, and to an extent, I still am. There are still some situations where I get uncomfortable in speaking up.
Okay.
And I think for me, it really manifested itself when I was in school. I really struggled when I was in school with learning to read. Mm-hmm. I was late to reading.
I can't relate to that.
Yeah.
I was the same.
And I think because of that, I was very reluctant to raise my hand and ask a question because I didn't want people to laugh at me because, oh my gosh, you don't know that. And so I really had to compensate for that. And for that reason, I decided, okay, well, I'm going to make people laugh. And I was... Mm-hmm. You know, I was a very skinny kid. If you looked at a Q-tip and fluffed up the Q-tip and then put Gary Larson Far Side glasses on it, that was me as a kid. So it was very gangly. So I used physical humor, you know, to make people laugh. Uh-huh. And I'm still that way. But, you know, I've developed it a little bit more and my confidence has come out. I'm not as shy to ask a question, mm-hmm. And that's something that I've really had to struggle with in my adult life, mm-hmm. that just because I don't know something doesn't mean I'm any less than. It just means that I need to ask a question, and what I found is the question that I asked, everybody else in the room has got the same question.
So probably, yeah, so you're not the only person.
Yeah, and I just had to change the way of thinking.
I can relate to that, though, especially when you say when you're elementary school, like, you were having a hard time with reading. Mm-hmm. I was one of the people, because I grew up in Albania, and I don't know how you guys do it here, elementary school, but we had to read, like, paragraphs. Mm-hmm. I would always avoid it, because I was not confident, and I was not okay reading it out loud, mm-hmm. and people would make fun of me. So I always try to avoid it, like, pretend like I lost my voice or something. Yeah. So looking back at it, I'm like, that's so silly. Like, yeah. Why'd you make fun of it? But I know what that feels like.
Yeah, it was terrifying at times.
Yeah. I remember that.
So.
So, what is one of the most beautiful mistakes that you would say you've made in your life? And I like to call them beautiful mistakes because that would be teaching moments too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I love that question, and it's. And I love the description of it, because if you didn't learn from your mistake, then that truly is a mistake. Looking back at my life, I mean, I've made a bunch of mistakes, and we all do, mm-hmm. but I think that there was a point where, when I was in California, I had to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Do I want to pursue this thing, acting? Do I really want to pursue this? Or do I want to be with the person that I love, who was involved in theater, but she was taking a different trajectory with going into educational theater.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to have pursued it, I would have had to given up some things or made some difficult choices. One would be to forego a relationship. And so I made a decision that I'm going to put my acting career on hold. And I don't think that was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked back at my life and thought, what would have happened if? What would I have done if I had pursued this? And I think that's tragic to think that way because I don't want to live in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that had I walked away and pursued that, I would have given up, you know, being married for 25 years. I would have given up the possibility of, you know, having these two beautiful boys that I call my sons. Not saying that that would have happened, but I don't ever want to think of not having them in my life. And so it's not a mistake, but it is a beautiful decision that I made. And I decided, you know, later on in my life, I don't want to be in a position where I have to look back and go, what if, which was one of the big factors of why I made the decision I just made,
mm-hmm.
to leave a job that I loved and leave, you know, people that I love working with to try this new practice and to succeed at this new practice. So, you know, at my age, I'm not going to look back and go, what if? I'm going to go out there and do it.
Because we talked a little bit before, mm-hmm. we started the podcast, the recording. That must have been a scary decision, though. Like you said, 11 and a half years in the company.
It really was. And you know, people have asked me, why did you go looking for this? And it was pretty easy. So I didn't go looking for it. It came to me. And it was a decision that I made over about 18 months. And recently, you know, made the decision, yes, I'm going to do this. My philosophy at ADT was always to help people, to mm-hmm. enable others to succeed. And I maintain that philosophy. The help that I give people is just going to look a little different, but my passion for helping hasn't diminished.
So let's stick a little bit about helping people. Mm-hmm. You're very passionate about helping people, and you love helping people. Like, when did this passion start?
I think it, you know, I don't want to say that I was never a person that didn't want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it really started once I started training. And I moved from, you know, just being up there talking, being a talking head,
mm-hmm.
to working with people to learn it, to embrace it. And I realized that if I'm going to be a trainer, I'm going to be evaluated on the product that I put out. And so I wanted to make sure that the classes that I released to the floor,
mm-hmm.
had the best possible chances of success. And one of the reasons I got into management was because as a trainer, I only had them for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and then they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a manager, I had them for as long as they were on my team, and then I could develop them and watch them grow. But even that changed, because when I first got into management, I had a one-size-fits-all. And then I realized my one-size-fits-all approach to management was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was creating some roadblocks that didn't need to be there. And so once I changed my approach to how do I find out what makes Romina tick?
Mm-hmm.
How do I find out what makes Fred tick so that they can have the best possible result? And I think for me, to answer your question, that was when I became passionate, when I saw light bulbs going on, not just with my agents, but I saw light bulbs going off in my own head. And I went, wow.
What are some questions or some methods you would practice to find out their why or what makes a person tick?
It was to change from superficial listening,
mm-hmm.
to deeper listening, and that's still something that I'm exploring. And I'll give you an example. I had an agent that was really struggling with overcoming objections.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every sales agent struggles with dealing with objections, but I don't know where it came from, but I started asking her, what do you do when you're not here? And mm-hmm. she goes, well, I'm in nursing school.
Okay.
You know, I volunteer at a hospital and I do this. I want to pay. Well, have you ever had a situation where a patient didn't want to take their medication? She goes, yeah, it happens all the time. Well, mm-hmm. how do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly she started talking about the strategies and how she would get the patient to take their medication. I went, okay, well, so that's no different than what you're doing here on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, a different situation. And so I just started asking questions about what is important to them, what they love, what they don't love, why they're there, who are they working for. And then I began to be able to have different conversations with them, with my agents, not only to get the performance that I needed, but to partner with them as they do this thing called life.
So you looked over that 40 hours or that overtime, whatever they have mm-hmm. to be on that building. You ask them about their life.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of managers out there, they concentrate just within that 40 hours, keep their professional relationship, and that's it. So I feel like that's why you're special, because you go mm-hmm. over the board and you relate to them more.
Yeah, I mean, I try to. I mean, at the end of the day, they're humans.
Mm-hmm.
I've developed some really strong relationships with some of my agents. Not all of them, but I remember vividly one of my agents, her son was sick,
mm-hmm.
really sick. And he was in the hospital, he was in a coma.
Aww.
And I kept saying, I gotta go see her, I gotta go see them in the hospital. And, you know, it was about a week, and then finally I realized I needed to go see them. And so I went to the hospital, and, you know, the agent, I mean, she was basically living there. I mean, you know, her son was in a coma. But, you know, I spent about an hour with her, talked to her son, prayed for them, prayed with them. And then I left. And then later on, I found out that her son had died that day. And
I got chills.
I know. I mean, I get...
Poor thing.
Yeah. I think anybody in that situation would have done that, would have gone. But
not everybody does it, though.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. But I felt so compelled, and she doesn't work for the company anymore, but I keep in touch with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's very dear to me, and you know, there are times where someone just needs, you know, more than just a pat on the back. And I can't say that I do that for everybody, but I like to think that, you know, God has given me the ability to know this person needs more than, you know, just, hey, you need to get your metrics up.
But see, there are moments like that that actually make you stand out and make you a true leader. There are moments like that because you can train somebody, you know, like when they come in training, one thing that we say back home, I'm going to try my best to translate this, mm-hmm. but we say when you enter school, you're just a piece of wood. And then when you finish school, you're a sculpture, depending on how much you study. So pretty much, like, it's a masterpiece. It depends on you and depends on your teacher, how good you become. So those are your agents. You can try your best. You can help your best. But, like, you going out of your way to go to the hospital and be there for her, maybe that 1 hour, she needed that. That's what actually... I feel like puts the human side in the business side.
Yeah.
And I feel like corporate America is losing that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, I've seen situations where, like, the manager would get a hold of you, or a coworker would get a hold of you if you were sick or something in the family. I feel like that's not there anymore as much as it used to be before. Am I wrong on that? Or?
It's a balancing act. It really is. I happen to have had a really good manager, a unit manager that I reported to, Melanie, that was just fantastic in how she led her team. And so I used a lot of, you know, what she did and how she managed, you know, and incorporated that into how I wanted to be a manager. So she was a really good model for that. But it's a challenge. You know, at the end of the day, there's a business that has to be run, but if you don't have people out there, you're not going to run your business. So,
I mean, people are assets.
Exactly.
If you don't have them, then
yeah.
They're the face of the company whenever they talk to the customer. So we did, I did mention a little bit earlier when I first met you, you were holding the book, and I know you love reading.
I do.
We always exchange book ideas. Yeah. What would be one book that you think have changed your life?
There's been a lot. I mean, I get a lot of it out of each book, but one book that really stands to mind is a book called Mindsets. And I can't remember the subtitle, but it's called Mindsets, and it's by an author named Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K, Carol Dweck. She's a professor at the University of Columbia. And in the book, she talks about two different mindsets. There's a growth mindset, and then there's a fixed mindset. And I'm probably not going to do it as justice as I should, but a growth mindset is that mindset of, what did I just learn there? How can I get better? You know, I'm not where I want to be yet. And she talks about the power of yet, and it's fascinating. And then there's the fixed mindset, where this is as good as it's going to get. I've learned everything I'm going to learn. There's nothing else you're going to cram into my cranium. And I can see at various stages of my life where I was stuck by a fixed mindset. And there's still aspects of my life where I have a fixed mindset, and I'm working towards moving that from fixed to growth. And so you're never completely 100% in a growth mindset. But I know when things get rough, and when things get stressful, I can think, okay, well, I'm in a fixed mindset. I'm just not where I want to be yet. And so it's a very powerful image of how our mind works and how our attitudes shape us and direct us. And so I go back to that book a lot. I've got the printed book, but I also love my Audible.
Yes.
So when I run, I plug into Audible. So that's a book that, like, at least once a year I go back and I listen to it because it's so powerful.
I like that. I wrote it down, so I'm going to look into that.
Yeah. She's got some really good TED Talks.
TED Talks, too. You said you run. Didn't you start the 200 push-up challenge, too, or something?
Oh, yeah, I did. You saw that, yeah.
So how's that going?
Well, I've got 50 left I have to do tonight.
Oh my god. So what do you do? Like 50?
I'll do 25 at a time. And I pace it. So the workout group I belong to, F3, stands for Fitness Fellowship Faith. We started this challenge. So 200 push-ups a day for as long as you can make it. and then we communicate on Slack, on that app Slack, and so we'll post, I did my 200.
So you guys hold each other accountable too?
We do. This is a fantastic group of guys. I joined this group about 3 years ago. And when you talk about iron sharpening iron, not just physically, but
mentally,
spiritually, they are my brothers. And there are guys there that I could call up at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, I got a problem. Can you help me with it? And they're there. It is one of the most fantastic things I've done as an adult.
I was wondering what F3 meant, because you wrote in there, but I wasn't sure. Yeah. So thank you for explaining that. Now, I know you also like writing.
Yes.
You have this thing called Edism.
Edisms.
It's my accent. We'll blame it on that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, the Edisms are articles that I started writing probably about a year and a half ago. I made little minute-and-a-half video shorts that I would send out, email to my team, mm-hmm. and little motivators, hey, we're going to do this. And then I really wanted to explore a different side of me, in writing. So I started writing these little articles, mm-hmm. And I called them Edisms. And at the end, I had the little tagline, let that marinate for a bit. And so it really came out of, as I was running, I would have a thought, this happened in my life. How is this like what we do at the call center? And I found a way to morph that, to tell a little story, and then tie it back in to what we do as sales agents. Mm-hmm. And I just started sending it out to my team, my team of like 15 agents. And then I carbon copied my boss, and she says, you really need to include everybody on this. And so I included it on the rest of my peers. And then it grew to the entire department, and then it grew to all of these sites in Jacksonville and Texas and Wichita, and it got all the way up to the vice presidential level.
Nice.
So
down in Boca?
Boca, yeah. But, I think John Marvin was in Wichita. But Jamie,
Wichita, the office. Jimmy was in Boca,
Jamie Hagee, I think, is in Wichita. So she's one step below the CEO. So it got all the way up to there, and it was just an opportunity for me to tap into that.
Yeah.
And if they were meaningful to people, and people said that they got a lot out of them, but it was more for me to explore that part. But it was also an opportunity for me to reach people on a different level, and some of them had absolutely nothing to do with work.
Mm-hmm.
There was one where I through the course of my workouts and my runs, I'd lost 20 pounds. And one day I was thinking about the 20 pounds that I lost, and I thought, what did that feel like? So I put on a 20-pound rucksack, and I walked around the call center for a day with that 20 pounds, and it was heavy. And you don't realize how heavy it is until you walk around. But I talked about this was physical baggage, but mm-hmm. how do we lose the mental baggage? We're all bound with baggage that we bring into work relationships, and that baggage can tie us down. And so how do we release ourselves of that mental and that spiritual baggage? And I just posed a question. I didn't give anybody answers,
but
it's going to be different for anybody. So that was one of the edisms that generated a lot of buzz.
That does sound like a great article, and
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me, please. Yeah. I'm interested to read it. And all started just with an idea while you were running.
Mm-hmm. Some of my best ideas would come when I was running, because just opportunity for me to think.
When I do the bonus episode, I call them, mm-hmm. besides the interviews, the bonus episode typically are Thursdays, so some days I throw in just another day there. It's typically when driving.
Yeah.
Do you like running?
I like the benefit of running. I like stopping.
Mm-hmm.
So, starting is the hardest part. I do enjoy it. I had to take a break for a knee injury, but I'm getting back into it. But I love what it does for me. I love what it does as I run, and I really love it when I stop, because that feels great.
And do you listen to audibles when you say you run?
I do.
Not to music.
I will listen. It depends on what I'm trying to do.
Gotcha.
If there's something that I'm really trying to focus on, I will listen to an audible book.
Mm-hmm.
If I really just want to enjoy the run, I'll listen to music.
Because I'm kind of the same when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to think, maybe it's whenever you find, what you like. Because I love driving.
Mm-hmm.
You can put me on a road trip, I'll drive for 10 days straight. I won't get tired. I love driving. I just find it so peaceful. As a character, I'm a dominant and I'm a control freak a little bit. So I feel like if I'm in the charge of the steering wheel, I'm in charge of everybody.
Of course you are.
So even when we go on road trips, I'm like, I don't care, you guys can come into my car. So I feel like I'm in control and I'm on my zone, and most of my ideas come when I drive. And I typically, I just like put the recording mm-hmm. app on the phone, and then I just recorded whatever I'm thinking. Like, I listen to it later, I'm like, huh, I'm smart. Or like, I'd be like, what the heck was I thinking?
I've done that.
But that's where like the episode, the bonus episodes yeah. and stuff come to mind. And I don't really listen to music either. I do yeah. podcasts or audibles.
Yeah.
So going back a little bit, you were a trainer for sales department at the mm-hmm. National Sales Center, and then for the retention department.
Mm-hmm.
What? How would you teach somebody to negotiate? I know negotiations, we can talk about this like for days.
Yeah.
But what are like two of the favorite techniques that you like teaching people?
I love learning about negotiation, mm-hmm. and I am what I would call a student of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would first tell somebody is understand what it is you're trying to do. If it's to pull one over on somebody or manipulate somebody, then you need to talk to somebody else, because that's not what I'm about. But I think if you are trying to build a relationship through negotiation, then the first thing that you need to do is start asking better questions. And this is where the Voss book comes in. And I learned a lot from Voss and then Kwame Christensen, which is another guy I listen to, but you know.
Correct.
Yeah. So your what and how questions, you know, what, you know, you mentioned XYZ, what's your biggest concern with that? It sounds like you're really frustrated. How did we get to this point? And then just stop and truly listen. And that's the hardest part I found, is to listen, instead of listening for when they stop talking, where you interject, but truly listen for what it is they're saying. And because they're going to tell you a lot. They're going to mm-hmm. tell you a lot, not only with their words, but they're going to tell you a lot with their emotions, and how they're answering your question. And so, you know, one of my biggest takeaways that I would train my agents is, you know, you're negotiating for the wrong thing. You're negotiating for a price, but what you really need to be negotiating for is more time, is mm-hmm. to listen, to get in more information. And so, did I answer your question?
Did it.
Okay.
Do you feel that, because I know a lot of people, like, communicate and listen to respond, not to understand.
Mm.
Is that, like, whenever you're working sales, or whenever you just want to be good with people, do you feel like that mindset need to be changed?
Yeah, you know, Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People,
yeah.
Habit 5, seek first to understand, then be understood. And I think that there are so many times where we get that wrong. And that is one of the things that I constantly will tell agents and myself, okay, well, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to get them to understand. No, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. I need to understand. And so if we can listen to really, truly understand where it is that they're coming from, a lot of times that is half the battle. In being able to acknowledge, okay, well, it seems like this has got you so upset. It sounds like your biggest concern is XYZ. Yes, I've talked to 12 people today and you're the only person that's listened.
And it seems like, it sounds like.
Sounds like, it looks like. And then they said, no, that's not it. I didn't say it was. I said it just sounded like.
That gives them the option to continue and talk more.
Right. And I think one of the things that agents and people, just in people in general, is how do you let the other person save face? No one likes to be told that they're wrong. Even if they are wrong, pointing out their fallacies only pushes them further into a hole, and then the negotiation you thought was in is that now over. So, and this has been a challenge for me, because there's so often times where I'm like, oh, I'm right, and I'm gonna prove to you I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you proved to you're right, and the guy just hung up on you, and now you don't have anything, instead of just, you know, saying.
But what did you win?
Yeah, you won nothing.
You reminded me, our conversation reminded me from How to Make Friends and Influence People by mm-hmm. Dale Carnegie. There was part of the book when he talks about Abraham Lincoln mm-hmm. when he was a president. At that time, it might be mistaken, but I'm not American, so I'm learning about American history. The Civil War was that time, right?
That was that time.
When Abraham Lincoln was mm-hmm. the president.
Yeah.
So I remember Dale Carnegie talked about a situation where the president at the time, he wanted to make a decision about the war, but he was not sure. So he had his friend from Illinois go to DC, and all his friend did was said, "It seems like, it sounds like,
mm-hmm.
it looks like to me." And he just talked and talked. And whenever in a speech that Lincoln did, he said, "The best person that knows how to deal with people and the best person that will close a deal is my friend."
Mm-hmm.
When the friend was not even educated, but all he did is, it seems like, it sounds like, and it made him talk more
yeah.
and get everything out of his mind and make a decision that affected the whole country.
Yeah, it's easy, but it's not.
At the same time. But yeah. I remember, it seems like, it sounds like, it's on the... And that's one of my favorite books, How to Make Friends and Influence People.
I love that book.
It's really good. All Dale Carnegie books are great.
Mm-hmm.
My very last question, I know we can go on for days and days, but they're probably going to kick us out of here soon. My very last question, I'm always intrigued by this. It's what is your definition of success?
Well, as I've gotten older, Romina, it's changed, because I used to think I would be successful if I had X. You know, this would make me happy. And I would get whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel successful. Now, I have goals. I have, long-term goals. I have short-term goals, financial goals. Things that I want to accomplish for me and for my family and for my business. But success suggests that there is an arrival point, and that there's some place you have to land. Now, we can set our goals and we can achieve our goals, but you're always striving for something else. So what I am learning to be successful with or find contentment with is the process. And I wish I could find out where this was attributed to, but someone's definition of perfection was the act of becoming. And so we're always in this act of becoming. And so for me, success is, how do I find contentment with the process? One of the books that I listened to when I was running my half marathon was David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me.
I love that book.
I do. I get so much from Goggins. But he talks about the 40% rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about giving up, physically, mentally, spiritually, you've only gone about 40% of what you're capable of. And so that's that process of being successful. And I can be content with where I am. As long as I've got my family, I can be content. Doesn't mean I don't want to pursue my goals, but I don't want the process to ever be tainted where I am not looking around and being able to help those around me because I'm so focused on getting this goal and having a one-track mind. That goes against the reason why I feel like God put me here, which was to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get my goals, but I can be content in the process. And that, to me, is my definition of success.
Thank you for sharing that. And I love the 40% rule from mm-hmm. David Goggins, too. And I actually posted this on the social media, too. But one of the big reasons why this podcast even started is because of that book.
Really?
So you know how he talks about that accountability mirror on the book?
Yeah.
So if you actually go to my bedroom right now, I got a tape in the middle of the wall. And on one side, I have sticky notes for professional goals. And on the other side, I have sticky notes for personal goals.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot. Like, I know that.
So I was like, I've always thought, like, let's start a podcast, let's get my voice out there. And he was like, you just have to do it.
Well,
it can't hurt me. If you don't try, you never know.
Yeah, I got to tell you that when I first learned about this and when we connected on LinkedIn and I realized, oh, that's Romina. after I listened to your podcast, it was so inspirational to me.
Thank you.
To see what you've done in a relatively short amount of time. And I remember listening to some of the podcasts and going, wow, that was a fantastic question. That is awesome. This is Oprah. So you're doing a great job.
Thank you. I remember when you messaged me on LinkedIn, I was like, Mom, look at this. I was like, I got this message. And that day I just had a bad, horrible headache, and like your message actually made my day that day on LinkedIn.
That's awesome.
I was like, Mom, look, I used to work with him in the other building, and like, I'm so excited. It made my day when you sent that message too.
That's good.
So I will attach all your information on the podcast where people can find you, of course.
Perfect.
And do you have your own website right now, or?
No, I don't have my own website.
Mm-hmm.
That may be coming. I'm
going
to get my feet wet, but I would love to be able to connect with anybody who wants to connect with me. I'm on LinkedIn.
Perfect. I'll attach all the information that you have there too. Email, LinkedIn,
Facebook.
Perfect. I'll attach it all of the episode information. So for all you guys that listen to the podcast, thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you for taking your time and investing your time to this episode. Don't forget, we have new episodes coming in every Tuesday and Thursday, and as always, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitchers Radio, YouTube, Podbean, and now on Google Play also. So have a great rest of the day, guys. Bye.